Poor Cinderella. Every time she find a minute, that's the time when they begin it. Cinderella, Cinderella.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to Pop Goes the Classics. This is our ongoing series where we talk about all the Disney animated features, and we're working our way all the way from the beginning with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs all the way up to the latest and greatest animated films. I am one of your co-hosts, Andy Aston. Thank you for joining us tonight. Tonight we're talking about a great movie, actually probably one of the more popular, well-known of the classic Disney animated features. But we're going to talk about what that movie is in just a minute. Let me get the rest of the crew in here. Also joining us is Miranda Berthold. Hey, Miranda.
Hello, Andy.
Hello to you. Happy to hear your voice once again as we return to our full-length features now, where we've yes. done a whole bunch of anthologies where we talked about a lot of shorts, but now we get to talk about a full-length feature, which is really the bread and butter of what we're trying to do here.
Right.
It's great. Also joining us is Steve Riddle. Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Good to talk to you guys again.
Yes, it's been a bit, so it's great that we got back together, considering there is 9 hours of difference in time between the three of us. Let's be a record here. So tonight, we're going to change things up a little bit. Miss Miranda, you're going to be driving the ship, driving the car, steering the ship, however you want to say it. You're going to be leading our discussion. And what movie are we going to be discussing on this episode?
On this episode, we are going to be discussing the 1950 film Cinderella.
All right. A very great movie. Like we said, the return to full-length features. So, Miranda, take it away.
So I'm pretty sure everybody is already familiar with Cinderella, but for those that aren't, and if you've listened to our podcast, we like to give you a little bit of background on the movie. So Cinderella, of course, is a 1950 film. It was animated, of course, by Walt Disney, and it's based on the fairy tale Cinderella by Charles Perrault. I did find out that the story of Cinderella itself does actually date back as far as 1 BC, and so that's pretty cool that Disney like went and pulled a fairy tale from that far back. And this is the 12th featured film in the Disney animated series. The film did have a limited release on February 15th of 1950 before being a nationwide release on March 4th. So just basic information here. Great music. We'll talk about that. There's a lot of fantastic music in here. And apparently this film was a massive critical and commercial success upon its release and kind of reinvigorated the Disney company, because we talked about this before, I'm pretty certain, but they were kind of nearing bankruptcy after like a $4 million loss from failure, you know, what they considered failures, which we didn't when we talked about them. We didn't consider them failures. We also talked about kind of the times that went with. There was a lot of war times and people not being able to afford to attend things like this. But so this kind of hit classic status and allowed Disney to kind of continue to the success in which they are today. It is also considered one of the best American animated films ever made. And that was dubbed that by the American Film Institute, and has, of course, been inducted into the Library of Congress National Film Registry in 2018.
Yeah, lots of great information right there. Yeah, Cinderella is very well regarded, as we'll get to. It basically checks all the boxes in terms of animated features, what you want. It's got, you know, a protagonist, a heroine that you can sympathize with, cute animal friends, little sidekicks, a handsome, love interest, and a very vile villain with some, I don't know if you want to consider the stepsisters henchwomen,
but I think you could definitely consider them.
They're not the main villain, but Lady Tremaine is the main villain. So, yeah. So
right.
Yeah, I Cinderella is a movie I can put in all the time. One of my favorite characters of all time we'll talk about is, you know, Gus. Everybody loves Octavius. Gus.
Yeah.
One of the cutest characters. The language that the mice speak is so much fun. Nice little addition to the movie. Steve, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this was always, it wasn't always one of my favorites. I remember watching it when I was little. I'm sure I think I had it on a cassette back in the 90s. I've always liked it. It wasn't, like I said, a personal favorite of mine growing up, but it was always I've always liked it. Like, you know, there's some good characters in it. There's some good songs in it. And it was, you know, just one of those that it wasn't one I would always throw on a whim, but it was always one I liked when I watched it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I cut out there for a second. I was like, wow, why is it so quiet? Oh, it's because no one was there. So I'll go ahead and kind of give a brief introduction to the plot of the movie itself, and then I would like each of you to be thinking about like your favorite part of the beginning, basically, and kind of like your favorite character and how it plays out. So basically, Cinderella, and it goes into it in the opening, she's the very much loved daughter of a widowed aristocrat. To make it very plain and clear, he is doing well for himself, and he decides to remarry because he thinks his daughter really needs motherly care. And he ultimately decides to marry Lady Tremaine, who is a very proud and confident woman. And she has two daughters of her own who are about the same age as Cinderella. And their names are Drusilla and Anastasia. They're the ones that we referred to are they henchmen? Are they not? I say yes. Mm-hmm. So the plain and socially awkward stepsisters are very, very envious of Cinderella and her beauty. And of course, probably that connection that she had with their dad. And so after her father dies, which they never say how, I have thoughts on that. Lady Tremaine kind of true identity reveals, and she's cold and she's cruel, and she kind of shares that jealousy that Cinderella has, that charm and that beauty. And her daughters take over the estate and begin to basically abuse and mistreat Cinderella. There's no other word for it. It's abuse. And they force her to basically become the maid of her own home. And while they off squander the fortune and doing whatever they want to. And with that, Cinderella has made friends with the animals and kind of made the most of her day. And of course, as we all know, during this time, the prince, they hold a ball. I think is it because the prince needs to marry? Do you guys remember? Typically, that's usually why. It's because the prince needs to marry, so they hold a ball. And, of course, the way it used to be done is they would invite all the eligible ladies of the land, so they come across. Cinderella hears about this, gets super excited, thinks that she's going to be invited too, even has her mother's old dress. That's not the case. The stepsisters ruin everything, and in comes those adorable little creatures again, bringing in a fairy godmother and granting her wish to send her to the ball. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's the first part of the movie. So I want to know from you guys, like when you're watching this and as you're watching it all play out and you see the opening and that sad story, which Disney has done that multiple times, we've already talked about, and they'll do it numerous times again. They give you this horrific story of like, oh, by the way, her dad died, and now look at what she's been thrown into. What do you feel about Cinderella's situation and how she goes about it and makes her day? And what is your favorite part of her, like, making the most of it, basically?
Steve, go ahead. I'll let you go first.
Sure. Yeah, it's definitely a kind of messed up situation that Cinderella finds herself in. Like you said, her father, you know, has her best interests at heart and thinks that she wants a mother, you know, that she should have a mother. And, you know, he marries, you know, Lady Tremaine, who he thinks is this, you know, nice lady who has, you know, two daughters herself. And then we see her true colors come through after he passes. And it's kind of funny. You mentioned about how you, Miranda, how you thought you have some like ideas as to how the father died. I didn't even think about that, you know, for so long. And now that you say that, it's like, you know, that does kind of make you think a little bit, you know,
right?
It makes sense.
CSI Disney here.
Sinister intentions. And it wouldn't be above Disney to do something like that. But all I can think to myself is that for everything she's gone through these last few years, Cinderella has definitely got a strong, you know, will to her that she's still able to be so, you know, kind and gentle, even though she's, like you said, she's basically being, you know, abused by these three that she still calls family, even though they treat her like nothing. And, I think it's funny how she's gotten to the point that she's formed such a close bond with these, like these mice and these birds, that she's making them little outfits. And when they end up finding, you know, they find Gus in a rat trap, and, you know, basically let him know what's going on, you know, how they, you know, they, the mice care for Cinderella and help her, and how they have to avoid Lucifer. And that's, you know, that's kind of one of the running, one of my favorite parts of the film is the running kind of, you know, no pun intended, cat and mouse game of Lucifer trying to catch Gus. And, yeah, you know, which, as, by the way, I still can't figure out of how Cinderella got Gus from Octavius. It makes no sense. I still don't get it. But yeah, then you said
it,
about
it
how
it had to have been something of the time. Like maybe that was, I'll see if I can find some information, but you're right. Like there are names that when you shorten them, it makes sense. Like why you would call like Steve from Steven, or, you know, so I get that, but like Gus from Octavius, I don't get either.
Yeah. And then about them holding the ball, it seems like it's more, the king is kind of making it clear that he wants the prince to marry so that he can, mm-hmm. so that he can have children, so that the king can have, you know, a grandchild to, you know, to kind of watch over, because he said he's, you know, he's getting older and he feels that the prince is not, you know, needs to find a wife and he's not doing it. So they're trying to make it seem like, you know, he's clearly trying to set his son up with a bride. And, you know, when they find out, you know, another one of my favorite parts is when, the stepsisters are singing, you know, the one, I think it's Drizella singing and Anastasia's playing the flute, and
you know it's
so bad when even Lucifer doesn't want to hear it and he leaves the room. So, but yeah, that's just some of the, things I kind of took away from like the first half, that, you know, Cinderella can be, you know, has every right to be bitter and, you know, kind of upset with how she's treated, but she just keeps a level head and stays, you know, kind and gentle, even though she really has every right to hate her stepmother and her stepsisters with every passion, but she doesn't. And I think that's what endears her to a lot of people.
Yeah, she is the classic, you know, like you do lemons, you try to make lemonade character.
Right.
I mean, mm-hmm. she does her job. I mean, incredible balance, you know, with the way she has to, you know, with all the trays and the bowls and everything. And that's a lot of stairs. That's one of my notes. That's a lot of stairs
that she has to go. Yes, I have it on in the background right now. Mm-hmm. And she's marching down them. And I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, Miranda, how do you think Lady Tremaine did it? You think she poisoned the father? You think that was it?
So part of me, I obviously am a huge, huge Disney fan, but I also really love true crime. And so I am really big into this podcast that talks about poisonings. You've heard me talk about it, Andy. Yep. So they talk about poisonings. And during the time period in which Cinderella would set, it would be very easy to poison someone. And people did all the time for the stupidest of reasons. But it would be very easy to poison someone and not get caught. So I am thinking, it says very plainly in anything you read about the movie, and it kind of indicates it as well, when they're telling the backstory of why Cinderella is in this tower and is the maid, basically. And they have Tremaine looking down, like she is also very jealous of the relationship that Cinderella has with her father. So my thoughts are, what if she was so jealous of this man's relationship with her daughter, with his daughter, that she decided, well, I'm his wife. I would inherit anything he had anyway, and I could finally do away with that girl, you know. Mm-hmm. So why not just poison him when you get his dinner?
There you go.
He's an aristocrat. You're an aristocrat. So when people come in to take the body, of course, autopsy really wasn't a thing yet, number one. You would have just been like, please, I just want this done. Please just get it over with. And you would have had the money to pay people to make it go away. So yeah. am I speculating and digging a little too far? Oh, yeah. But it's just kind of weird that he just died.
Like, yeah. I mean, I think they don't want to have, like, you know, a character accused of murder or anything out and out. But yeah, you know, there was something fishy going on there. You know,
for sure.
You know, who knows? Maybe he could have had a weak heart or something. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, again, it was the time when it was not uncommon for people to just, like, in their 20s and 30s, just die, or in infancy, just die. So there's that too. But I don't know. There's something to Tremaine that I'm like, I think she poisoned him, but that's just me.
Yeah. Well, she's definitely, she's up to no good regardless of whatever she's done. Yeah. I think the way that they have, like, their big rooms and you bring me my breakfast, and Cinderella just kills him with kindness, basically. You know, I think she does a tremendous job. And I think she has to consider them family, but really it's the mice and Bruno and the horse. I forgot the horse's name all there. That's really her family. And, you know, she makes the clothes, I think, because Disney wants you to know which ones are boys and which ones are girls, I guess. But
I think it's her care. It's the care that she truly has. That's the only thing that she has control over.
Yeah. Lucifer, definitely a nasty little cat. Actually, we're in the next couple episodes, we're going to talk about some cats that are very critical to the plot. You know, Bruno was another great dog. He was framed, I swear. The prince is a hopeless romantic was another thing I wrote down. And the music, too. We have, a dream is a wish your heart makes, which is a great all-timer. Then we have a work song with Gus and Jacques. I love the scene where they're trying to get the corn, right? And they're trying, and the use of music, I've talked about this many times where, you know, no other movies besides animation, well, there are some, you know, other movies, but, you know, mostly in animation, you can really, really tell the story with the music, you know, the up and the down, because it really adds to the senses of how and it's a great scene where poor Gus is trying to get, escape from Lucifer, and he's always trying to take one extra corn, kernel of corn than he should, but, you know, Jacques is there to help him out. What else do I have? Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo is a fun song, and you don't realize the fairy godmother is such an essential character. She's only in one scene in the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she comes in, does what she has to do, and then goes. So I thought that, and also the king reminds me, or probably more like it, the sultan from Aladdin probably reminds me of the king a little bit, similar build, similar thing. You know, I love the scene, the Bibbidi Bobbidi Spoo scene where they take the mice and Bruno and the horse and they transform them and they pumpkin to the carriage. It's probably one of the best sequences of all time in an animated movie. So that's my thoughts up to this point in the movie, Miranda.
And I really like that you guys both really talked about Bruno and Lucifer, because if you look at these animals, they obviously hate each other and they are so much like their owner, because Bruno is clearly hers and Lucifer belongs to the Tremaine family. So it's just kind of funny how I'm sitting here like with it on in the background, even though I've seen it 1,000 times. And it finally occurred to me that Lucifer is kind of he is a version of his owner, and Bruno is a version of his. And I've noticed that as we'll go on, if you've ever noticed villains, because Tremaine, she's our villain here. If they have animals, they are like them. They are, that is
Yeah, they're extensions, really.
Yeah, they're that's it. That's the word I was looking for. That I was just like, why can't I think of that? Yeah, they're an extension of their owner.
Yeah, he's I think he's like almost like a spy. Like he's kind of like her her eyes and ears, like
exactly
of knowing what Cinderella's up to.
And the mice and all the other animals, really all the animals were kind of that way for her as well, kind of telling her like, oh hey, this is going on. So what I think is really interesting as well is that there are a few scenes of the palace, but they are not, other than when we finally get to the ball, are not the main concern of the story, because the story itself is Cinderella. So when they decide to organize the ball and to find the suitable wife for Prince Charming, which it is, it's to find a wife, which makes sense. Because like you said, he wants grandchildren before his death. So every eligible maiden in the kingdom is requested to attend the ball. And Cinderella asks her stepmother if she can attend, because she is still part of the family. And they did say every eligible lady in the family. Lady Tremaine agrees. We all know that that's not going to happen, though, because she says it's provided if Cinderella finishes her chores and finds a nice dress to wear. So she's distracted, extra chores. And her friends, though, fix up the gown that belonged to her mother. And they go downstairs and they scoop up Drusilla's old beads and Anastasia's sash and they throw them on the floor, kind of escaping with them before Lucifer can catch them. Because again, like you said, Lucifer is the eyes and ears. So I just want to know, do you think Lucifer is only doing the bidding that he sees fit? Or do you think in Lucifer's eyes, oh, this is what's supposed to happen. Like, she's wrong.
Well, Lucifer's just a bad kitty. And he gleefully, you know, is naughty, so to speak. You know, he's got a look on his face when he's doing bad.
It's like he has fun doing bad.
Yeah, that's just him. You know, and he's an evil cat.
Well, there's that one part where Cinderella's, you know, scrubbing the floor, she's singing and like lost in her world. Meanwhile, Lucifer takes like dusts his paws up and just leaves tracks all over the floor for her.
Yeah, he takes pleasure in that.
Okay. So you actually brought up one of the scenes I wanted to talk about. So it's when she's cleaning the floor. This scene to me, when she's cleaning the floor and the bubbles are floating up and she's singing this beautiful song after she's ran Lucifer off and told him, like, I've got to teach you a lesson. Like, did you feel that it mimicked other things that we have seen already or will see? Kind of, I find that Disney does things that they kind of move around into other scenes. Like we talked about with the Heffalumps and Winnie the Pooh, or I've mentioned them. We talked about it, I think, in, was it Dumbo? And kind of,
yeah, see Pink it again Elephants here. On Parade. Yeah. Yeah, they do like a little side scene.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a little character moment for all of them, and kind of shows, you know, Lucifer a little bit, gives him a little moment just to be more trouble and cause more issues, and shows Cinderella just continuing to do what she does every day, basically.
Yeah. So, and with that scene comes what Steve mentioned I am like sleepy and I am mixing things up tonight. Steve, was it you earlier that were talking about the flute scene with them singing?
That was me, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I thought it was. So now we go on to that one. And it makes me wonder, because Andy also brought up the different songs. When you're thinking about this, there are very iconic songs. So which one would you say you felt was the best placement of the movie and kind of is your favorite? And when you think of Cinderella, you think of that song.
Andy, you go first.
Oh, what was the question again? I'm sorry.
So, because you mentioned all the songs earlier, I was just asking, out of all of them that you hear, when you think of Cinderella, which is the first one that you think of, and which is your favorite? And it could be the same one, but like, what do you think of?
I probably think of Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo, because so much happens for her in that scene. Mm-hmm. I think all the transformations, and it's a cute story, you know, cute song with a delightful little old fairy godmother. I mean, the work song is up there as well, because it's the, you know, Cinderella, Cinderella, and it's very catchy. And yes, it gives Gus and Jacques and the girls to the lady mice to get on. And yeah, there's no bad songs in this one. Sometimes there's like ones in some movies that, yeah, it's a little step below. This one, they're all really good. And yeah, I think Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo, though, has got to be my favorite and the best one, in my opinion.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo being one of the more fun songs of the film, but I actually think that when I think of Cinderella, I think of A Dream Is a Wish Your Heart Makes. I feel like that's kind of that feels more like the centerpiece song of the film, because, you know, we hear Cinderella singing at first, and then we hear it multiple times throughout the course of the film. Like, we hear the mice singing at one point when they're making her dress, and then we hear it kind of in the background when that one little brief moment when Cinderella finally loses hope after she gets her dress destroyed by the stepsisters. And then we hear it again at the very end, which we'll get to. But I feel like that song is kind of makes the movie, in my opinion. But I do agree with you too on how Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo and the work song. I also kind of think an underrated song is the is So This Is Love, the duet that she sings with the prince.
Oh yeah,
I think it's kind of one of those forgotten love songs that doesn't get talked enough about how good it is.
I'd agree with you. I think that's probably my favorite as well. It's one of those, like, you kind of just randomly find yourself humming, or at least I do. And it kind of is what brings the hope back to the movie as well. Because, like you said, she's kind of just, at the point that we were discussing, she's kind of just like given up. She's like, well, this is just horrible. So to me, So This Is Love kind of brings it all around and brings all of that kind of hope back together. And I have like a confession to make. So the dresses that Anastasia and Drusilla wear, they have like these big bustly butts, right? Like these big tussly things. Mm-hmm. So when I was a kid and I first watched this movie, I had these big poofy curtains in my bedroom. And after watching this movie, I refused to sleep in my bed because I said they were the evil girl's butts on my window. So as like a very small child, I am angered that my curtains look like their butts. And I don't know why that has stuck with me all these years, but to this day I'm like, oh, I had butt curtains, because you know they come down the steps and the way that they move. So I had like, yeah.
It almost sounds like a Carol Burnett skit when she does the Scarlet.
If you think about it, them coming down the stairs like that is kind of a Carol Burnett skit.
Yeah, it is. I think that's Carol Burnett was like Scarlett O'Hara. And she does that with the curtains, and she's got the rod going through her shoulder pad. Yeah, they look ridiculous with those big old butts, whatever those things are.
They look absolutely ridiculous, and Cinderella looks amazing. And I think what is the most violent part about this, or vulgar part rather, is the fact that she allows the girls to just rip this dress apart with no care whatsoever. And I remember as a young kid being like actually distraught and thinking, why would you allow something like that? And especially like you as a mother, would you ever want your child, you know, being treated that way over something that was yours after your death? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just very like, hey, Disney, let's scare the shit out of some kids.
Yeah, I popped it on too while we were discussing it. And it's a very, you know, it's not violent, but it's a very like, you know, they're ripping the crap out of that dress.
Yeah.
And Lady Tremaine, like, you know, totally sets it up and then has that like really nasty look on her face, like, you know, as she's shutting the door before they go to the ball. So it probably, if you talk about a scary scene in this movie, that's probably it right there.
Yeah.
Because that's like Mean Girl Central too.
Oh, for sure. So this is the point of the movie when she kind of like, which it also shows again, kind of the aristocracy that she would have come from, because she's running through this giant, almost palace of her own estate. And you realize like just what all her father built to provide for her that is now just kind of like being tossed to the side. She's very upset, and apparently this is what allows Fairy Godmother to appear, which originally I learned some of the most original stories of Cinderella did not include a fairy godmother. Not sure how that would have worked without a fairy godmother, but apparently the original stories did not have her for some reason. But here she does. She shows up, boop, out of nowhere, and I think she's the most adorable, like everyone would want her as an actual granny. Am I not right? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. So here she shows up with a new ball gown and glass slippers, which I have lots of complaints about glass slippers, but okay.
They don't look comfortable.
Well, I mean, they don't look comfortable, number one. They're glass. Like, if they break, you losing a foot. I'm just going to say. There's lots of things. But this is when the hope kind of gets restored. And you can see there's some doubt in Cinderella's eyes. But what I also like is, again, we're going to repeat later on down the road, because this fairy godmother looks very similar to some other fairies that we're going to encounter later, essentially. And the fact that they played all of the mice and everything in as the coachman and such, what would you say your favorite transformation is in this part? Obviously, I feel like a lot of people are going to be like, oh, well, the fact that she's done the dress. But I think using people that make her feel safe, like bringing in the animals and part of the transformation and giving her this wonderful night with all the people that she cares about. Yes, they're mice and horses and stuff, is for me the best part. So for you guys, when she's going about this transformation and singing this amazing Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo song, what is your favorite transformation? Like, what part were you like, that is really cool?
I think for me, the my favorite one of it was when after she turns three of the mice because Gus runs away for a second. But then when she finds him and turns them, you see who's happens to be there but Lucifer trying to catch him again. But, you know, Gus gets turned into a horse in time, and then Lucifer kind of realizes what happens, gets scared away. And then the godmother kind of gives him a little, you know, prick from the magic, just as a kind of a little serves you right. And, you know. And it's funny, even after that, Cinderella still is kind of sympathetic for Lucifer, which is kind of funny, but that's just her nature. But that's probably my favorite part.
Yeah, me too. I, you know, the because Gus gets like finally gets a little revenge, I guess, on Lucifer for terrorizing him. And, you know, the horse, though, is a good transformation. And he looks just like, you know, has kind of the similar features. And Bruno is there to, you know, be the one that helps her in and out, because she's helped him out so many times. So I think it's kind of also like, you know, them repaying Cinderella in this way.
I also really like that little prance that Gus does when he realizes, oh, wait, I'm a horse. He does this little like, woohoo, I am better than you. And I do like the fact that the horse himself was not just made a horse.
Yeah.
Which clearly I think you couldn't, because Tremaine would know, why is my horse pulling this carriage? You know?
That's true.
So that would be really strange. But she makes all of this happen, and they show up at the ball. And of course, obviously, since Cinderella's been treated as like the maid of the household, I would doubt that many people would know as a grown adult who she is. I'm sure there's some speculation and been some talk, because a young girl just doesn't disappear. You know what I'm saying? Like, they know she's still alive, or they assume she's still alive. But I'm sure if there were of that that aristocracy, it was not very common to just have them disappear. But at the same time, you wouldn't have seen them very often. So I'm sure there is some sort of maybe, who is she? Could she be? But they never actually say when she shows up. But to me, it's very strange that pulling her hair back in a bun and giving her a fancy dress means that her stepsisters and Tremaine doesn't know who she is. Mm. It's like that Superman, Supergirl thing where you just put a pair of glasses on them during the day and magically no one knows who they are. But she does get to go to the ball, which is her dream come true. And there are some stipulations, and it's like all dreams, it can't last forever, is what the fairy godmother tells her. So it's only until midnight, which, okay. So she has to understand that she must be back at the house at the stroke of 12. Everything will be broken. So she goes to the ball, and after seeing the prince, falls madly in love, which apparently happens. Mm-hmm. And he rejects every girl until he sees Cinderella, and to include Anastasia and Drusilla, who are like adamant that they're going to get this prince. They're going to bag him. One of them's taking him home. Not going to happen. So, mm-hmm. of course, chimes midnight. She flees and she drops her glass slipper by accident, which, how does it not break? Mm-hmm. Anybody know?
Magic.
Magic. Well, okay. So speaking of, that means, so I had a question that I wanted to ask you guys. So I understand it's for the continuity of the story, and I get that. But if everything disappears at midnight, why didn't the glass slipper?
That was one of my questions.
Okay.
You know, in effect, everything but the glass slippers. My favorite part of the ball, though, you know, talking about the ball, I have mm-hmm. it on now. It's like jarring my memory, like how everybody's look at everybody's faces when they see Drusilla and Anastasia come up. Even the prince is like, ugh. And then the king is like, ah. And then when they all see Cinderella, like, ooh, they like fawn over her. And it's instant love. Yeah. But what would the result have been had she been there and the spell wore off? I think we would have the same ending, basically.
I think you would have had a similar ending, but I think it would have been more on the lines of an Aladdin, where like, why did you lie to me? Like, why didn't you just tell me who you were? Sort of deal. So, Steve, what do you think? Why do you think it didn't disappear? Like, why are the shoes the only thing that didn't disappear?
That's a good question. Never kind of stopped to think about that one. Maybe because she lost the one, and because she still had the other one, it kind of broke the rules. I don't know. That's a good question.
Maybe it's not a complete set or something, or
perhaps that's one thing that never gets talked about. It's like, because it's like, you don't stop to think about it. It's like, it is kind of weird that the slippers remain, but everything else turns back to normal. And no one ever stopped to think about that. I agree though about, that's the part, because the ladies are, you know, being introduced to the prince, and he looks like he'd rather be anywhere else but there right now.
He even yawns at one point. Yeah. Like he's like trying to hide that he's yawning, but he like, yeah,
he's like, so he's bored with this. And then, like you said, Anastasia and Drusilla come up, and the king gets this like, ugh, no, thank you. And you know, like the duke, you know, it's telling him, you know, like, I told you this would happen, and he describes this whole big scenario that the king thought would happen, and sure enough, when Cinderella shows up, it happens, word for word, and this is obviously where we hear, so this is love, and they dance, and they fall in love, and Cinderella should also be thankful that the spell didn't wear off until the bell tolled 12 times for midnight, because if it started right as the bell started tolling, she would have been in trouble.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was, but yeah, this, that whole scene is the whole like sequence is really well animated. And, definitely one of the highlights of the film.
I really like, I didn't even realize this, but until now, the guy, so he's like the king's, I don't know. I don't. I was just calling him the king's man, but he actually calls him a pompous old windbag. I just saw that in the background. I was like, I don't remember this. But she does. So when she does take off, obviously at the stroke of midnight, and none of us know why, but the slipper does remain. And everything else transforms back, and she is back home. So as far as Tremaine and Drusilla and Anastasia know, there's no reason for them to suspect Cinderella. I mean, they get home and she's at home. I mean, why would it be her? She couldn't afford any of that because we don't give her access to the money. But the next morning, because the prince was so enamored and so happy with this young lady that no one knows who it is, the king makes a proclamation that he's the Grand Duke. So not just the king's man. He's the Grand Duke, must visit every house in the kingdom to find the girl whose foot fits this glass slipper so that she can marry the prince. Which I had a friend the other day. So I put up in one of my reading groups and one of my romance groups what their favorite thing about Cinderella was, or what's one of the things. And one of the girls got something like some of these questions that I thought of, I didn't think of till I was an adult, like me asking you guys, like, why is the slipper still here? And she asked another question about the slipper that I was like, oh my God, I have to ask the guys this. And she's like, how is it that Cinderella is the only one in the land that had that size foot? They're like, is it magically like suctioned to mold her foot that it would fit her foot? Like, what's the chances that she's the only lady in the land that would fit perfectly?
It's a custom job, I guess. I don't know.
Right? I guess
maybe.
So.
I don't think when Disney was making this film that they were asking themselves the same question. They were like, people will be so vested in it, they won't ask these type of questions.
Yeah, and then those kids turn to adults, so now we start asking those questions.
Yeah, it's like going, it's like, well, that's what a lot of movies and stuff we watch as kids, we go back and watch and we're like, whoa, you know, this is messed up, or why didn't they do this? And, you know, this whole thing wouldn't have happened if they hadn't just done this one thing. Yeah, we look at it through adult eyes, but when you're a child who honestly is the target audience, they're not going to think about why is the glass slippers not changing. And how come she's the only woman in the land?
Right.
You know, that fits the thing. You know, it's that's not the things that, a little 6-year-old girl is going to think of. She's just going to go, oh, the mice are cute and they're pretty dressed. And oh, she meets a prince. Yee, boys are yucky, but yay. You know,
oh, my God, that was great.
That was unexpected.
Oh, that was fantastic. I loved it. Oh my God. So she does. So the Duke has decided that he has to try this on every foot. And one of the parts of the movie that I think is hysterical is when he's trying to force this shoe, when he shows up to the Tremaine residence, obviously, and he's trying to force this shoe upon the sisters. Because it's really... He's not trying to force it. Let me rephrase that. They are trying to force their foot into this shoe. Cinderella at this actually has been locked in her room.
Tremaine puts two and two together, I think.
Yeah, has realized that Cinderella, because she overhears her maybe humming. Yeah, she's humming the songs from the ball. And how would she know that how would she know that song? How would she be able to hum that song if it wasn't her? And she realizes who it is and locks her in her room because nothing is going to stand in her way of becoming the daughter, you know, the mother-in-law to the prince, basically. So when the Duke arrives, the mice, who have been her best friends this entire time, retrieve the key to Cinderella's room from the stepmother's pocket, and they bring it upstairs. But before they can deliver it, they are ambushed by none other than our favorite Lucifer, who traps Gus Gus under a cup. So all the birds and the mice and Bruno get together to free Cinderella, just as the Duke is about to leave. And as the Duke prepares to kind of leave, Cinderella comes and says, nope, nope, this is not all the women of the household, and requests to try on the shoe. So she knows it'll fit. Lady Tremaine trips the footman, causing him to drop and shatter the slipper. That's when Cinderella produces the other glass slipper. And, of course, it fits. So Prince Charming and Cinderella celebrate their wedding and apparently live happily ever after.
Aww. The end.
So here is my question, though. Since I know the story is mainly about Cinderella, and it's maybe just the wedding enthusiast in me, but wouldn't you have liked to have seen a little bit more from the whole she put on the shoe to, like, this wedding and, like, or is that just me being adult again and overthinking it? Like, what are your guys' feelings on how this all, like, solidified in the end and what was shown and what was not shown, what was just understood?
Well, I think there's been a lot of movies where the main character, you know, gets married and you see the animals, like, in the, you know, the background, like, waving or being part of the celebration. I, you know, I don't think we really needed it. We could see that they were clearly love at first sight and smitten with each other. So we knew it was going to be happily ever after with the two of them. I think I'm good at where it ends. Honestly, there was a couple of things I noticed too. Was you know, there was a goofy yell when the chandelier falls.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh yes, yes.
Yeah, I don't know what the exact technical term is, but yes, there was that. And then also, now, do you think Lucifer dies when he gets thrown out the gets thrown out the window, right? Falls out the window. You know, and Bruno's to the rescue. And I think this is probably one of the best mic drops. You know, Cinderella, you know, produces that, you know, that other slipper. It's like, boom, there you go, done. Story over. He's mine. Later, bitches. Not so much. I'm paraphrasing.
No, that's good. Now I'm just picturing Cinderella pulling out the slippers, like, boom, bitches.
Mic drop. That's funny.
I agree with, but I do, in all seriousness, I do agree with Andy that final moment was fine for the film. We didn't need to go through the whole, I don't think we needed to go through the whole thing of seeing, like, them, like, a full wedding. I think that would have been a little overkill. One of my favorite, like, low-key moments is that moment when Lady Tremaine, when she realizes that Cinderella is the mystery girl, and just that, like, that close-up of her face with the light dimming is just such a great, like, moment in cinematography. Just, like, it's just so, because you know at that point that, you know, it's about to go down, that she's going to do whatever she can to make sure Cinderella doesn't, you know, get in the way. And and then like the last scene where everyone's trying to fight off Lucifer, and finally because you know Bruno has been dying for that moment to get Lucifer out of the way. And, you know, whether Lucifer dies or not, I mean, that's a pretty long drop from the towers, so if he survived, it was definitely a miracle. And we asked earlier, why did the slipper survive? Maybe this was it. Because like, the one shatters, and you think, and Lady Tremaine thinks she's won, but then, you know, sure enough, Cinderella's got the other ones, and she gets, you know, and, you know, the ending comes. So maybe that was why the slippers survived, for all we know.
Could be.
Oh, so. Yeah. That would make really good sense. So with the ending here, I don't think we're going to cover them, Andy, but there is another Cinderella movie. They actually, do Cinderella 2.
Is there two or three?
Two or three.
Yeah, I, you know, having had a daughter, you know, and when these direct-to-video sequels were coming out, we did watch Cinderella 2. I think it was kind of like the Wicked Stepsister. One of them, I think. Mm-hmm. Is it Anastasia gets kind of like, you know, gets a, you know, does like a face turn, use a wrestling phrase, where she kind of becomes, you know, it's like Cinderella. She kind of jumps teams, I guess, to Team Cinderella in that movie. I think I'm trying. It's been a long time since I've seen it. Also, I feel bad for the Duke, I guess. So he has to pull an all nighter. And, you know, as somebody who hates feet, that would be like my nightmare, having to try women's shoes on. You know, he almost like looks like you know, an exhausted Al Bundy. Yeah. Just like this poor guy.
A nicer exhausted Al Bundy.
Yes. He's just wiped out. He's like, he walks in like, he's like, lady, come on, we just gotta try the shoe on and go, okay?
So apparently this was one of the few movies that has been theatrically, not just re-released, but theatrically re-released. So now I was like, well, how did I see this? And I'm pretty sure I actually did see this one in theaters. It was originally released, as I mentioned earlier, in theaters in February 15th of 1950, followed by a re-release in 1957, 1965, 1973, 81, 87, and 95. So I'm pretty sure I went to that 87 one, probably went to the 95 one again too. And then yeah, go ahead.
No, I said I probably went to one too.
You probably did. I am sure you did. And then, you know, I was complaining about these glass slippers. So apparently in the original French version of the story, glass slippers are actually fur. They're fur slippers. And this is because of a translation error. So in the French version, they were fur slippers, which with the weather I'm having right now, I'd be all for some fur slippers. Just saying. And then Walt Disney actually said Cinderella was his favorite fairy tale because he saw himself in her shoes. And he did mean that pun because he said he had worked so hard and to get rewarded for his work, just like she did. She worked so hard to get what was justly hers and to get rewarded for her work. So are there any fun facts or anything cool that you guys learned when doing your rewatch research, or was it kind of like a nostalgia nod back to like, oh, this is really cool and I enjoyed that? Like what was this for you?
Good, Steve.
It was definitely a good rewatch. It had been a while since I had last seen it. When I did it for the Wonderful Reviews of Disney, I was kind of in awe of how much I really liked it again. It always kind of reading up on these things. It was always interesting, learning about like the production process and how they would use live action stand-ins for the animation for animating the scenes, which I always thought was kind of a cool little technique, because you always hear about like how animators kind of mimic themselves when they would draw the pictures and draw everything. Yeah, it was definitely a good film. Like you said, it did spawn those two, direct-to-video sequels, which I've never seen. And then, of course, it was one of the first, big remake, live-action remakes of the last decade. And I remember when the remake came out in theaters, how well it did. I never got around to seeing it, but I remember it doing really, really well. But I still think it's one of those classic films that you can watch anytime and get into it. I think it's definitely good if you're looking for like one of those early films to show to your kids. I think this is a good one to show them. There's some a lot of fun moments. The characters are really good. The music's really good. And I think just overall, it's one of those timeless classics that just never gets old.
Yeah, like I said, I had watched it a lot when Jessica was little, and it does appeal to boys too, luckily, because they have Gus and Jock and Bruno. For those are all aspects that the boys will like, and yeah, it's a lot of fun. The music is great. It's definitely up there in terms of the top ones. And also a lot of, if you're a Cinderella fan, there's a lot of Cinderella in the parks.
Yes.
There's Cinderella's Castle, which is the icon of the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World in Florida. Then you also have Cinderella's Royal Table, which is probably one of the most expensive character meals you'll go to, which I've never been to, which I don't know if I'll ever get to. But there's character meets all the time. There's the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, girls and women can get transformed. If you're a Big Bang Theory fan, there's a very funny episode where the ladies, Bernadette, Penny, and Amy all play hooky, and they go to Disneyland, and they do and they all have an argument over who's going to be Cinderella, and basically Bernie wins it because she's driving and it's her idea, and she's also a little scary, and then they do a very funny scene later on where they're all in the costumes. Also, there is the Princess Luncheon at Akershus in Norway in Epcot, which I have been to, which was a lot of fun. And there's also 1900 Park Fair, which is a restaurant at the Grand Floridian. And the last time I was in Disney World, which was in 2018, we did go there for dinner. I think it was our first night there. And we did get to meet the Wicked stepmother and the stepsisters, and they were great. They were in such character, such disdain for us. They, of course, had to, took the pictures, and there's, I have pictures of my daughter holding her dress. They made her hold her dress the same way they were holding their dresses. It's so much fun, and there's, you can find it everywhere, and it's a great story.
I agree. I think it's one of my favorites. It's not my absolute favorite, but it's definitely one of my favorites. I like the nods that you see, and I mention them over and over again. I know people are probably like, stop talking about it, but I can't, because I really like that as we move from movie to movie, there's something in them. Like, I've noticed several things in this one that make me think of the next one that we're going to watch, and as we go backwards as well. So I like how they keep bringing things forward, but they also kind of pull things from prior. Overall, I think the music is great. Everything was great. I love that it has such a presence in the park, because it did kind of turn Disney around, as we mentioned earlier. It did kind of bring everything back and bring it to the forward. And you were talking about how you used to watch this with Jessica, and it's very appealing to young girls, most all young girls. But my son absolutely loved it as well. Obviously, talking mice that had their own language, zip, 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 zip. That was his like favorite thing. So I think it's definitely up there in top tier of when you think Disney, one of the first things that comes to mind. Obviously, when you say Disney, a lot of people immediately go to Mickey or Minnie, but I also think of things like Cinderella as well. So Steve, do you have any really cool final thoughts on our watch of Cinderella here?
If you haven't watched it in a while, check it out. I'm sure you'll be pleasantly surprised with how well it still holds up, even, 70 years later. It's hard to believe it's the movie is 70 years old, and it's still, it's still always regarded as a classic. And like you said, I think this is what Disney needed coming out of, the 40s with the war and the package films and, being on the brink of bankruptcy. This was, I think, exactly what he needed to rebound. And as we'll see, as we go through the decade, the success of this film kind of, I think, embroiled him and kind of gave him the confidence he needed to move forward to not only continue with the anime films, but also with what would eventually become Disneyland, which, as we know, gets opened up at during this decade. So I think this was definitely, without this film, I don't think we're not, I mean, really without this film, we're not sitting here talking about Disney, 70 years later.
I mean, I think the profits actually help fund Disneyland, I think, and I have it on. I noticed that after they have the wedding, they're running out and she actually loses her slipper again. On the way down the stairs. I think that was a good touch that I guess I just was oblivious to before. Yeah, a lot of great points, Steve, that, this if this had not been a success, if they had not returned to full-length animated features and had not chosen the right one to come out of the, start the new decade with, who knows where the Disney company would have ended up. Would they have been a success? Would Disneyland have gotten built? Would they have been able to get the backing from the banks? Would Roy, have been able to do what he did to help Walt out? It's a great, again, it's something that every parent should show their kids when they're little, because there's so much, there's appeal. It's fun. It's not scary at all. I mean, there's a few dark-ish scenes, but there's
not every child is going to think that her curtains are going to attack her. It's cool.
No, you can never, drapes are scary. Okay.
Paper! Shut up.
It's a dark and stormy night. And there I was. highly recommend it. Avoid the direct to, avoid any of the direct to movie sequels for any movie.
Unless your child is enamored with this and you need peace and you just need to turn something on and you have access to Disney Plus, because number two and number three are on there. So give your child more Cinderella while you take a much needed break, because pandemic lockup is a thing.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah.
I just went on a mom rant. It's okay.
It's okay.
No, seriously, I agree. You probably ignore those because I can't remember pretty much anything about them, but they are present. There's number two, there's number three, there's live action, and there's a live action that was kind of based off Cinderella. It's not Cinderella, but there's Enchanted as well. So you got live action Cinderella, Cinderella 2 and 3, direct to DVD cartoon, and Enchanted that you can just keep on going if you really want to.
So much fun. One thing about, say what you want about John Lasseter and that the tarnish on his legacy because of, stuff that has happened or accusations. That was one of the best things he did, though, when he took over as head of the animation, was no more of these direct, no more. They're cheap. People know it. We don't need them. Let's get back to basics in the storytelling.
Yeah, so overall, I think it was fantastic. I'm kind of glad that we are continuing our loop through these or our march down the line. And thank you for allowing me to, even if I was half sleepily doing it, thank you for allowing me to kind of like ask the questions and and put forth.
Well, this is one of, you had mentioned when we've talked, these are some of your favorites, some of the female-led movie. So it, of course, to do it justice, I think we should have you do it, and you did a tremendous job.
Thanks.
So so let's kind of go around now and say what else we have. This is dropping on Thanksgiving, so happy Thanksgiving to everybody who is listening to this on Thanksgiving.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving.
Steve, what do you have to direct people to?
Well, as this will drop on Thanksgiving, the next day on Black Friday will be the next installment of my wonderful reviews of Disney, which is Big Hero 6. And I know we had a pretty good discussion over on the Place to Be Facebook page about how I said that I think that that's maybe one of the most underrated films in Disney history, and that sparked a pretty good debate where we put up some good films to talk about. And actually, one of the guys on that discussion, he argues that Big Hero 6 is probably the best Disney film of all time. Obviously, that's up for debate, but it definitely it was a great film. I was very surprised how much I really enjoyed it, and I remember liking it when it first came out in theaters. But it'd been a while since I'd seen it, and I forgot how much I enjoyed it. So that will be up on Friday, and then Monday actually will be two different things from me. Will be the November 2010 box office report. And also that edition of the Vintage Vault previewing, where I will be looking at a match from the July 1991 MSG House Show as we continue to build to SummerSlam. So that is what you can find from me going forward.
All right, great. Miranda, a new Geek and Sassy drop. It was so nice to hear you ladies get back together. I truly adore that show. I love you guys both. So what else do you have to direct people to?
So we should have, that one is out. So we have a Geek and Sassy episode out currently that you can listen to. We will have another one out pretty soon. We're going to do a Christmas one coming up. Ben and I have our first official, actually like present, I'm not just saying it's coming soon, episode of Telly and T. We are going to have a small tea episode. As we promised, small tea. We're gonna have afternoon tea, and kind of discuss the Great British Bake Off as it concludes this week as well. So we're gonna have a snippet of Great British Bake Off for you, and I'm pretty sure I'm forgetting something, but really in my main projects right now are this Telly and Tea, and of course always Geek and Sassy.
Yep, and check out Mom's a Nerd also, right?
Yeah, you can find me on all of my social media handles under Mom's a Nerd. I post various content from my life, geek life, everything.
All right. Very cool. As for me, check me out here on the PlayStation Pop Feed. I have a bunch of shows that I'd like to direct you to. We have Blockbuster Rewind, the latest episode. We talked about the Matrix trilogy, as well as Johnny Mnemonic.
Oh, that's such a good movie.
Johnny Mnemonic?
Yes, I love that movie.
There is a dolphin in it.
Don't care.
A code-breaking dolphin. Oh, my God. All right, well. And in the next episode, coming out in December, we will be doing the Indiana Jones franchise. And you've heard him on another series of Pop Goes the Classics when they did the James Bond, as well as now the just wrapped up Star Trek one. But Tech will be back. He'll be our guest, actually, on this episode of Blockbuster Rewind. Also, new episodes of Making Mount Rushmore drop every other Monday. The last one was all about sports video games. The next one is we're going to do a music episode that will be dropping the Monday after you hear this. And that is, we talk about cover songs and songs that have samples or hooks in them. And then coming up, you know, with the Christmas and holiday season coming, one of the next episode after that is going to be Christmas songs and Christmas TV specials, as well as Christmas episodes of Laughing Theater. I have a couple of group watches lined up. We're going to do National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, as well as Home Alone. There's going to be a great debate holiday special as well. And hopefully Year in Pop will be back before the end of the year. Also, don't forget, check out the PlayStation Wrestling Network, home of the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Jenny and the Gems, Special Relations, all kinds of great shows over there, as well as the Jenny Position, that is Miranda's partner on Geek and Sassy, Jennifer Smith. She has her very own feed featuring the Brother Sister Rewatch, The Journey Through Infinity, Bianca's First Time, all kinds of great stuff over there, as well as the North-South Connection podcast feed. That is JT, Chad, and Aaron's feed with stuff like The Year That Was, Extreme Three-Way Dance, Shrink Wrapped, Second Print Comics, all kinds of fun stuff over there on that feed. So there's lots of you guys check out. Also check out the site, PlayStation.com. Steve has many articles he posts every week, so check those out, as well as all the podcasts can be found there. Check us out on social media. Also, make sure you join the Place to Be Facebook group. All kinds of fun stuff. And actually, when you hear this, we have our first little mini tournament that will have started by the time we are doing the Greatest Christmas Song, basically, tournament. And it's going to be really short, 64 songs. We have it plotted out that we'll crown our champion on Christmas Day. So every day there will be at least two matchups, maybe more, to keep us, you know, on track of our goal. You know, it's got to end on Christmas, because that's, you know, when I turn off my Christmas music, it's Christmas night. I turn it on Thanksgiving night. That's my little tradition. But anyway, so Miranda, what is our next movie that we're going to be covering the next episode of Pop Goes the Classics, Disney?
My very favorite. If anyone knows me, you know the answer. Alice in Wonderland.
Yes, and you will be leading us again on that episode, so I'm looking forward to getting together with you and Steve. So I want to wish both of you a very happy Thanksgiving. Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you.
And for all of you out there listening, thank you for listening to us. We're having so much fun doing this. It is a true treat to get to talk about Disney, especially with Steve and Miranda. So for Steve Riddle and Miranda Berthold, I am Andy Arthur. Thank you for listening to this edition of Pop Goes the Classics Disney. And we'll see you at the next episode. Take care, everybody.
Have a good time. Dance. Be gay. Now off you go. You're on your way.